Welcome to Juice Podcast. I'm Lauren Douglas.
I'm Emily Harmon.
And here we are. Today's episode.
Thank God.
We're in my spare room. We have a live studio audience today. His name is Ludwig. So if he barks, that's who it is.
Wonderful. Feel free to bark along at those barkable moments.
He'll be coming in and out, I think. So today's episode, we're doing no sulfite.
Yeah, we both bought a wine each that is made without sulfur. And I think it's quite an interesting topic because there's been it's been a hot topic, hasn't it? I think between people in the trade and also consumers for quite some time now. I guess that was all sort of instigated along with the natural wine movement, but by Isabelle Legeron's Raw Fair, which made it so, it made sulfur sort of the primary factor in natural wine. I think it's just good because we get asked a lot about what do you think of natural, touch on natural wines, what do you think of natural wines, but, you know, sulfur, what does that mean? Everybody's got a lot of questions about it.
So many different sort of denominations of whether it's Demeter, if it's biodynamic, if it's organic, if it's whatever, that there are so many different certifications, no sulfite, low sulfite.
Yes.
That it becomes sort of, depends where you draw your line in the sand.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of sulfur, also, I mean, there's the question of what is natural and what are the farming practices, and is it a sustainable business model in terms of environmental, social, economical? That's all different factors. But the sulfur really is just one part of production.
Right.
For me, I mean, you know, we have to remember sulfur. Why do we use sulfur?
Yeah, right. That's maybe my next question is what does it do in wine?
Yeah. So we have two main points of what sulfur does. And the first bit is obviously it's antibacterial. And Ludi's distracting me a little bit how he's like literally sat. Yeah. And just sat right in front of us as well. So, yeah, first of all, sulfur is antibacterial. So sulfur is used usually mixed down with water, diluted down in the cellar to clean stainless steel tanks, the floor sometimes, rinsing bottles, all different things to kill any potential bacteria and to work in a clean space as well. We also need to remember that different forms of sulfur naturally occur in a lot of the foods and drinks that we ingest.
Right.
We have sulfur in our own body as well. So one, antibacterial, two, oxidative.
So it's used to sort of sustain wine for travel. Was that historically the...
Yeah, and to protect it. So basically when we add sulfur, sulfur's heavier than oxygen, so it protects that wine from spoiling. Because as we know, if we leave a bottle of wine open in the fridge...
It spoils.
It starts to spoil after maybe 3, 5, 14 days, whatever it is for the particular wine. So that's why sulfur is usually added at bottling.
Yeah.
Obviously, then someone might ask, well, if it's keeping it clean and it's stopping
what's
it from spoiling,
right.
Why would we not add it? So, of course, like anything, you can do
too much of a good thing,
And but equally, I think particularly today where wineries are cleaner than ever.
Right.
And modern technology, the use for sulfur and the amount of sulfur is much less if you're being super hygienic. And that also means not exposing to the wine to oxygen at certain points in the winemaking process up to bottling. Bottling is a very important part, actually, because you can oxidize the wine just there. So if you're not working with sulfur, you have to be quite quick and clean in when you're making certain decisions. You know, it's not a wine that makes itself. A person has to make those decisions. Right.
I also think, like, for a while there was a big sort of hate on sulfur because people were like, oh, I'm sensitive to sulfur. I mean, I do think that a lot of times people are more sensitive to, say, to histamines in wine than they are to sulfur, because we eat so many foods that have sulfur added as additives anyway, as a preservative, like dried nuts and fruit, that are often at much higher dosages than wine is.
Yes, and I think there's still not enough data and research on both of these two things to even be able to say 100% this is the case. I've spoken to many doctors because I've been told I've got a histamine intolerance or I'm low on an enzyme that breaks down histamine. So, you know, I have to manage my diet at certain times and also just sort of not drink too much. But, you know, has its challenges.
When you work in alcohol.
But, you know, and I know a lot of people that have that when you get red cheeks or red neck and different, you know, headaches, migraines, even for some people. And I think, again, we still need more data out there, and there are many doctors that don't know anything about either of those two things. I was in South Africa, and the doctor said to, I went to the doctor, wasn't very well, and he said, I mentioned about the histamine thing, and he said, oh, maybe you've got a sulfites allergy, and I was like, actually, I don't think so. That's not usually a trigger, but I'm not fully informed, and I don't think anyone is, and so it's well enough
that would that be something anyway. Would be nice that if anyone has any research or has come across any research, to please send it our way, because I'd be interested in reading it.
We should ask your sister, she's a doctor.
Yeah, she'll be like, things to look into. Wine, yes. For the winos amongst.
Yeah, I would love to know if anybody does have actual scientific data on it.
Yes,
or experiential knowledge also on it as well, of, you know, I've noticed this and that. But it's not going to damage your health. But I do think there are times when sulfur is needed, because I've tried a lot of wines that taste also, that were just very dirty. But then equally, I've had wines that have got way too much sulfur that it mutes the nose. And I, as we'll see with these two wines here as well, there is a lovely expression on the nose when it's done right, I think.
Thank you. Oh, I don't
know. Okay, well, we'll start with mine and we'll pull the cork on that. Now I've got old Master Ludwig. Oh, he's going down.
The prince.
There we go. Shall I?
Much better than the Tycho.
I was about to say, Gwen.
Thank God we're not at the shop today.
Well, you've done your homework today, so you wouldn't need to open the... Oh, no, it's kind of mean, isn't it?
No, it's good. It means I do the homework, because I hate that opener. This is Tiny Ludwig, who's very interested in the Corvin.
Okay, great. So actually, I'd already Corvin this bottle just 2 days ago, so... It shouldn't be. So, the wine that I'm pouring now, just for the sake of everybody, well...
Listening,
watching. You can't see from this far away.
A nice colour.
So, we have a rosé from Northern Greece, from Domaine Ligas. So, it's called Le Rosé, the rosé from Domaine Ligas, or Katima Ligas. So, from Northern Greece, from mainland Greece, from the area or the region of Pella. So, not far from Thessaloniki. It's under an hour away. Slightly more inland, lots of clay soils here, and this is 100% Cascina Mavro, which is the name of the grape variety, which is not too dissimilar to Nebbiolo. It's my favourite Greek grape.
Yeah.
And when I say not too dissimilar to Nebbiolo, when it's made in a red form, even in the rosé, you see it initially, it's got quite a savoury nose.
I was gonna say, it has a meaty kind of
For me,
nose on it.
Truffle, Jerusalem artichoke, and a lot of strawberries here, so you get this lovely red fruit and aromatics. But also this sort of earthiness at the same time. And then when it's made in a red, in the style of a red wine, you get this lovely, obviously acid structure as well, but then quite a good amount of tannins too. So it's a bit like Nerello Mascalese, Nebbiolo. It's kind of Greece's answer to that, or vice versa.
So I love the colour too. It's a really nice sort of antique rose.
It is, but kind of it's
like verging on peachy.
Yeah, peachy pink.
Yeah, it's a really nice colour.
It literally looks like what strawberry juice might look like.
Ludi, what are you doing? He's just looking at the carpet. Weirdo.
He heard the word truffle. He's looking for truffles.
Oh.
Yeah, so this wine goes through, well, the grapes are picked. Obviously, there's a little period of skin contacts in tank, and then everything spends a bit of time in old barrel just to stabilise the proteins and the tannin. It's unfiltered, unfined, zero sulphur. So no sulphur added here. But they do that ageing, that passage through the wood, just to help that stabilisation to stop any potential problems in the bottle down the track. For me, this is like pure joy, this wine.
It's the alcohol percentage of 13.
Yeah.
Well, it's delicious. It's very, like, bright.
Yeah, and characterful. Like, when you try this wine, for me, there aren't many other rosés that have this much to them. Like, there's this lovely flavour and expression, but drinkability at the same time as well.
Totally. It doesn't have that sort of, like, sometimes with southern French rosés, you get it more all over your mouth, sort of in that back part. This is way more in a line.
Yeah,
linear. How else to describe it. What would you have this with?
It's a good question. A sunny day.
Perfect, yeah.
A rainy day.
Yeah.
A friend.
Yeah. Just being awake.
Next to the plant.
It's Dr. Phil.
Yeah. Is it?
He He's a philodendron.
Oh, that makes sense. I thought you come in here and tell him your problems.
No.
I think, for me, I would treat it with... I mean, do you know what would be quite nice? Just popped into my head. Char-grilled quail with pomegranate molasses.
Ooh, yum. Ooh, pomegranate molasses would be great with this.
Mm.
Totally. You're like,
Yeah. Roast chicken with cranberry sauce.
Yeah. I even think it could hold up to a salad.
Yeah.
With a lot of us, like, because there's enough, quite a lot of acidity.
Salmon, oily fish, something like trout or something.
Ooh, trout.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ooh, trout.
It's been ages since I've had
trout. A lot of trout here in Germany as well, isn't there? Especially where we are. Forella. Really?
No. I like trout, actually.
I do and I don't. Like, I'm a bit scarred from when I went to this trout farm. Did I tell you about that?
No.
So I went to this trout farm in the UK, in the Cotswolds, in Bybury. This beautiful, picturesque town. Lots of painters and artists have painted this beautiful space. Like, it's a little... Honestly, it looks like a little place in Lord of the Rings or something. It's in this little valley. Cute. And there's a trout farm there. And I'd heard there was a trout farm. So I was like, oh, I'll be up for a bit of fishing. Do my dad proud.
Yeah.
Fishing from a fish farm is not quite...
That's how I learnt, because my uncle had a man-made lake at his farm that he spent a few years putting trout in.
I mean, I don't know if you had the same situation, but it reminded me of being at a fairground and hooking the ducks.
No, it wasn't like that.
You didn't even cast in, you just put little bit of bait on, and then you hovered it in front of the trout, hoping that they might take it.
Everyone's a winner!
But so then Step I was right like, up. Oh, this will be fun, there were three of us, so like, I go in, get the trout, and then... If you hook it, you have to kill it. You have to take it home with you. Because they want to cash in on the sales for the fish as well.
It's not catch and release then.
No, so I was like, oh, fuck, okay.
I guess that's me for dinner.
So I was like, that's fine. So then he gives you the baton. Like, fuck, I have to hit it around the head. Okay.
Oh, fuck.
And I just looked at the guy and he's like, shall I do it? I said, yes, please. And then I was actually there with Renee.
Yeah.
And he had caught a trout that was double the size of mine. And he's like, yes, I got the biggest one. I got the biggest one. And I turned and I was like, you realise you've got to kill it now?
Yeah.
Then he had to kill it. And he was there with his son.
Oh, no.
Who was like, saw him, like, fourth attempt, tried to kill this trout.
Oh, my God.
After that, his son just pulled his rod out and was like, I don't want to catch a trout. So then we took these back and cooked them.
Yeah.
And I remember the guy at the trout place saying, trout's got a really particular taste. So I gave the small one away to the woman who lived next door to the Airbnb. We cooked the big one, who obviously died in stress.
Oh, no.
It was the weirdest tasting
fish. Hormones.
Yeah,
and
it was the weirdest tasting fish.
She's like,
it was almost like squeaky on your teeth,
weird.
Like cardboardy. It was really bizarre texture. Strange. And ever since then, my feelings towards trout.
Aw. Because it's one of the first fish I ever really like cooked by myself. Because we never really ate fresh fish growing up. Wasn't really something we had.
But trout than, like, is fresh if it's
fresh. Yeah, but I had it as an adult, like in my 20s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, sorry.
But like when we were kids, so I did have trout when I was little at the farm. But then I was so picky that I would only eat the trout that I had caught. So I would catch one tiny fish and I would be like, you better put that fish aside. I've got my eye on it. I'm watching where we're going. It's marked. It's my fish and I will only eat that fish. But I didn't have to kill it, so...
I'll gut and scale. I'll do that.
Right.
And fillet. But killing is a difficult thing.
I mean, I was like 7, so.
That's fair.
Thankfully, no one made me kill the fish.
I think now I could do it if I had to.
I would, for sure.
Chicken?
Just with the head. I think that's how they do it.
What?
You just like hold their feet and pull their head, break their neck.
Is that how they break the neck? I thought they twisted it.
I think you can probably do a pull and twist as well. Anyone knows the proper
technique?
What's
you step on the feet and then you just pull?
I mean, most of what I say on this podcast are lies. So
I don't think they're lies because they're not. Well, they're not intentional. I think they're not correct facts, but I don't think they're lies because I think when you say them, you believe them.
How polite, not correct facts. So not facts.
Because I don't think you're actively just making it up. You believe it when you're saying it.
Yeah, that's why I say we've got the iPad. Yeah. We could check right now, but I think...
I don't think we should check how to kill a kitten. We're not going to. Chicken. I don't know what I was about to say then, but it sounded really weird.
Kicking chicken.
Yeah.
No.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how I heard. Who knows?
Talking about animals, should we segue into the coronavirus?
No.
I know, it's a hot topic. Well, hot topic. You wore your mask on the plane.
I did on the plane yesterday.
There's a lot more people around wearing their medical masks, though, isn't there? Even on the street.
I did it mostly because, like, after we were super tired, Lucas has had the flu, we had to fly, and that's always when I get sick. Is like flights after a moment where my immune system is
lowered. I have considered putting those. I have considered.
I wear them often on the plane.
Inside, I'm like a Japanese person. I do believe that. I could happily be living. If I spoke Japanese, I wouldn't be living in Berlin. Yeah. I'd be in Japan. I love everything about Japan. So I would. I've thought about this medical mask, wearing them out in public before. I just think the main reason why I wouldn't do it, because I'm a bit of, you know, I'm a bit of a germaphobe. Massive. I don't even like sharing glasses with people. Toothbrushes, forget that. But I think, yeah, you're much more relaxed.
I have to be. I'm in a job where I'm like, I mean, I'm clean at work, but I have a good, strong immune system, I think, because I deal with so many people.
Bleeding all
breathing
the time.
All over me.
Yeah, I think,
I do wear a mask at work sometimes,
and
too.
You wore the mask on the plane. See, I would feel a little bit stupid wearing one. That's the only reason why. I'd probably die if there was a pandemic, because I'd be too worried. ego would kill me.
Vanity.
Yeah, I'd be like, no, vanity. I'm not going to do that. It doesn't look so good.
No, because like after the last time I was in London for work and I was so tired after two conventions back to back, I knew it was that plane ride because I got a respiratory infection when we got back.
And a lot of it is just touching all the dirty surfaces
people
and then touching your mouth.
Never just don't touch
apparently
your mouth.
You touch your face like thousands of times a day.
I have to say that's one thing that as a tattooer we don't do so much. Because you're constantly wearing gloves, you just learn to not touch your face.
And you've got the mask on, right?
I do, so, not always. I only wear a mask if I'm
closer
to someone, yeah. Then I will. And especially if I'm close to their head.
If it was a bum tattoo or something. That's right. A yes, isn't it?
I'm bringing this one back.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, I'll be wearing I don't have a mask to wear for the plane, so
I don't have any here for you. If we were at the shop, I could even have some. I have some with flowers. I have black ones that could match your outfit.
I think a black one's a bit of a fucking joke. If I'm worried about already looking, it's a bit weird.
But it would match your outfit.
I know, but people are going to think I'm the Grim Reaper.
Mine had like an emoji face on it yesterday.
Oh, yours was sweet. You said it was almost like those eye masks.
Yeah, exactly.
I did. It was funny because I was wearing those masks because a friend was in hospital recently and I had to wear the medical masks because they were worried they might be contagious and just to stop the germs or whatever. And somebody who was there, like a mutual friend, said that I looked like it's a character from the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Ninja Turtles.
What did I say?
Hero Turtles. I mean, they are
heroes.
They're also heroes.
I'm lying too. What's the name? And it was funny.
Is it like
Shredder? So he was like, oh, she looks like Shredder. But then I thought, everybody does, not just me. Why is he saying that I look like Shredder? And I got a bit offended at first. I was like, that's a bit harsh.
You're like, what are you saying about my eyes?
Well,
like,
no, but like then, do you know why? Because I thought it was Krang. You know the little weird brain in the stomach?
Oh.
The creepy, scary thing. Yeah, I thought he was saying I look like
rat,
him.
Right? The rat is Shredder.
No, the rat is the person with the helmet, almost looks like with a bob, and wears the face mask. It was, then when I looked at it, I was like, actually, that's
really
quite
funny.
Accurate.
I bet you there are probably many people that have,
Krang's
like,
the guy that's like, Generation X, and he sounds like he's burping the whole time he's talking.
Oh, man.
Okay, what we're going to do is we'll share a link on our Instagram account. In our stories, when this is out, it'll be around. You can DM us if you want the link, but I'm going to send the link to anybody who wants it of the many voices of Krang. It is like 5 minutes of weirdness. If you're
more
into
weird
that,
than
I've
even
got
what's
it.
Happened here. In the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. Generation X. It's really, honestly, sounds like he's burping. So I was like, I'm really offended. It's like, honestly, shriveled up little brain. It's
That's
bizarre.
Really funny.
Anyway, back to Zero Sulfur, Hero Turtles. Ninja Turtles.
Ninja Turtles. Yeah. The dog's taking a nap.
He's like, Jesus Christ, they're going on. So, yeah, beautiful, pure style of rosé, full of character. And I think if this wine, just going, jumping back to the bottle, if this wine had been sulfured, maybe, and filtered as well, filtration's another topic altogether, we wouldn't have the beautiful colour cloudiness, which I really like.
I like it too.
Yeah, so don't be scared if you see haziness. And also this lovely fragrant nose. I mean, there's so much character in this. And on the palate, the texture.
Totally.
If you were filtering this and sulfuring it, you wouldn't get the same mouthfeel. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're right.
So,
very nice example of a no sulfur.
I thought you might like this one.
Because I do think that sometimes when someone's talking about no sulfur, then they give you something that's like mad funky and you're like, I think this could have used a pinch.
Yeah, hard and fast rule is like, you know, not all wine made with sulfur is good. Not all wine made without sulfur is good. There is good wine.
Yeah, totally. In every category.
Yeah.
Right. It's about finding the ones that, if it's something you're really passionate about, not consuming sulfur, then try out a bunch and
I would say in this defense, because I know people say the other thing that should come up is the thing about the hangovers, right?
Fuck's sakes. I have hangovers no matter what wine I drink, sulfur, no sulfur. So if you're going to say there's no hangover. I think
it's the volume, isn't it, mostly? It's not.
No, but it doesn't seem to matter.
Well, I drink 8 bottles of wine, I've got a hangover. It doesn't matter where it's from.
I don't find that there's a big difference for me. If anything, I find sometimes if I'm drinking a lot of natural wine, that some of them have higher acidity levels sometimes.
Yes, I would agree that.
So then I get actually worse hangovers for the acidity. So it's like, pick your poison.
Sometimes I can't drink as many wines that are as acidic. I agree with that. This one's not too acidic. But I think I would say, you know, like if you're drinking a bottle of Jacob's Creek or something.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I mean, after a bottle, I'm like, oh my God, like you don't feel as well for it. Like this is very, for me, I would say I am probably the same as you, equal hangover, but it's mainly because I usually enjoy these ones more, so I just drink more of them.
Maybe I should reframe that because it's also like, I don't think I've had conventional wines like that in a long time. I think even when I am drinking conventional wines. I think
we're quite left field, aren't we, really?
Because I'm drinking, even if I'm drinking conventional, they're usually very nice producers that are not your factory farmed whatever. Yep. So maybe I don't, when I compare those conventional wines to natty wines, I'm not really seeing a difference. Is maybe how I should say that. Interesting.
Yeah. And I think in general, we handpick, I know you do as well, you're one of the few people I know that goes down to wine shops and picks things out off the shelf as well.
Yeah.
You know you are.
Yeah, I love doing that.
Lots of people shop online or whatever. I buy my stuff direct through suppliers, get it delivered to me, but you kind of go around, you're like a treasure hunter looking for wine. But I think we would, even if we buy conventional wine, usually we're looking at high quality wine, totally. Which at least means farming practices are good. But yeah. So, Gwen, what have you bought us?
Let me get my notes out.
Would you like to try and use the old...
No, I don't want to try. Sure. Don't punish me.
That's fine. Right, I don't want to break it, do we?
No. No.
Even though I actually trust you to do this.
I'm just going to watch on the film later. But So, speaking of wine shops, I actually brought this back from Paris. Went to a nice little wine shop called Le Lieu du Vin. In Paris.
And Paris is really a place for low sulfur wines and no sulfur wines as well.
So we were sent to this shop by a somme that I know who works in Bordeaux. Her name's Margot. So thank you. The owner of the shop was amazing. So we went yesterday. Everything they have is natural. And we picked up 9 bottles with him that I'm excited to try. So this one is from Nadia and Christian Charmasson. The region is Tavel. I like to...
Do we know where Tavel is?
Southern Rhone.
It is,
South of France.
And rosé appellation.
Yeah, so probably more known for rosé.
I mean, one of the best rosés in the world.
Right.
Eric Pfiffeling.
Yes.
Longlore.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
So this one is 50% Grenache, 18% Mourvèdre. I can never pronounce that
on the back it says Grenache, Carignan and Syrah.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a little bit of that in
and
there.
They've snuck the old Mourvèdre off the label.
And this one says that it depends on the year. They sometimes use sulfites and they sometimes don't, but this particular year, which is
2014,
they did not. Because it says no sulfites on the bottle.
Okay.
So they are biodynamic, no copper use whatsoever. They only use sulfur on the years that they need. And treatments consist of essential oils and herbal infusions. Because I remember I read earlier that they left Demeter because they didn't feel it was strict enough. So they opted for a different certification that's called Nature et Progrès.
Okay. I mean, that's very interesting. This also links back to
what we've
Well, domain egads are doing that too. So they by working biodynamically, and they're moving towards permaculture at the moment. So that's that one step further past biodynamics, where you're integrating a whole ecosystem around the vine. So you're allowing plants to grow up in amongst the vine. So sometimes, I mean...
So is it things like plants that will give back to the soil certain nutrients that
yes,
say...
Yes, or so they like might attract a certain insect, which then might kill off a certain pest. So the idea is you're kind of trying to reduce pest humidity as well, all these different things. So you're getting almost like in the same system of creating like a forest, like rather than just like one monoculture. So it's actually really interesting. There's some amazing books on this.
I think we touched on this a bit with Alessandra Barra when she was visiting. Yes. Also the difference of how her vineyard looks compared to other vineyards in her area, that she has so many plants and insects.
She doesn't work with permaculture, but I think she's biodynamic. Yes. But I wonder if with these guys, I mean, with biodynamics, you're anyway using these tinctures, tea, you know, like...
The horn full of dung.
And instead of even using sulfur in the vineyard, because, of course, we need to use sulfur in the vineyard, or many people need to use it as an antifungal. So after rain, you would spray copper sulfate mix.
So that's what they say, they're not even using copper.
Yeah, but you can use, like, I import Domaine Ligas and also Jason Ligas's wines from Samos.
Right.
He uses garlic. So when you ferment garlic,
it's an antibacterial.
It's a natural sulfur, essentially. Yeah. So it's an alternative. So you're making natural sulfur.
You also get rid of earaches with that, toothaches, garlic, because it's an natural antibacterial.
Interesting.
Fun.
So let's hop into our...
Yeah, I was told this was very glue-glue, so I'm excited to have a little sniff.
It's interesting, the nose. I think as well, because it's 6 years old. You've got this lovely interplay between really ripe, sort of like almost like plummy, ripe cherry.
But there's and then black currant and...
Yes, definitely. Almost blueberry or
something. Yeah, I was going to say blueberry too. That's totally in there.
But then you've got this sort of earthiness in the background as well.
Yeah, it's giving me a little bit of the memories of your rosé with that meatiness.
On the palate, you get much more spice, don't you?
Yeah.
That syrup starts to come through. Very high acidity. Medium-bodied. Some fine tannins. What's really nice about this is you get these fine sort of supportive tannins, but the fruit is very present.
Right. It's really... Yeah, it's a little more tannic than I expected. But
I think it's less tannic than I expected. But
maybe I didn't know what I expected.
Yeah. But there's lovely freshness with this
It's really
wine.
Nice. Do you know what... you have to be careful. It's like almost 14%.
Is it?
Yeah, it's 13.9. That's one that...
You'd have to be
that's
careful.
Trouble.
Don't get led astray.
No. Down this little woodland path here.
Says the Gewürztraminer drinker. High alcohol, low acid wines.
Good for your tummy.
Yeah, there's a help.
Drink healthy. Well, this is very nice.
Yeah, no, very interesting. I think, you know, again, the appearance is quite cloudy.
Yeah, it is. But it's also a very pretty colour as well.
Yeah. It's quite... This is, you know, it almost looks like a tattoo label a little bit, doesn't it?
It's got kind of a funny label.
I mean, if you look at it from afar, it could be a tattoo artist. Then when you get with it, it's kind of a basic drawing.
Yeah, when you get it close, it kind of has like a... Maybe whimsical is the right word.
Whimsical, okay.
Because it kind of has like a...
They could make it a bit more punk, couldn't they? They could add some knives and hearts and daggers in her heart or something on there.
Because it actually says Balazou de Vaucière. Probably destroying that. Not what I've said before. But it's a vin de France.
Mm.
So they're doing whatever they like.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I think this would be like a cool summer night right before bed.
Chill it down a little bit,
yeah. Or autumn-y with like a pie, like a sort of gamey pie. I'd be down with that. Some good lard pastry and something gamey in there would be good.
What sort of pie?
Probably like the one I had.
I was about to
say. Would actually be good with this.
Yeah, the Clown Bar Classic. The pithy...
I don't even know what it's called.
Pithy.
It sounds like she's making fun of me when she makes that face looking at me.
Pithy.
It's like foie gras and duck and a bunch of other very...
You know, I've been to Clown Bar maybe 4 or 5 times and I still haven't eaten that there, actually. I've had the brains quite a few times. The Lucas, brains are amazing.
Lucas wasn't feeling very good yesterday when we went, and I didn't want to eat the brains alone.
The brains you could eat alone, they're amazing.
We'll see about that.
Gremolata, yeah.
If you,
I mean,
braver.
Also, they have not made to, like, I think as well, more people would eat brains if it didn't look like brains. Because it does come out and you're like, oh my God, that's just a brain on
the
plate.
It's kind of like when you first get, like, sweetbreads, you know? The first time I ever ate sweetbreads,
that I was like, foamy texture.
I don't want to eat it because I'm afraid of it. And then someone served it to me, that tell me what it was, and I was like, this is delicious.
And it's like the meat equivalent of a foam mattress texture. Do you know what I mean?
I think it tastes like KFC most of the time, like you fry it and it's just like delicious.
I mean, that says everything about the quality. You're probably getting glands when you're eating KFC, aren't you?
Probably.
The gonads of the chicken.
Gonads, just tiny chicken gonads.
That's all they, didn't you know, Gwen, that's all they serve at KFC is fried gonads.
I've never.
And occasionally there's a toenail or something that somebody finds.
One chicken toenail and some gonads.
It wasn't that funny all that time, like the news reports about things like that when it was like.
My favourite
somebody
one was,
found a finger in a can of Heinz beans. Yeah. And you'd just be like, oh my God, that would be awful. Wouldn't it?
Terrifying. Also, who lost the finger? It's worse for them.
I'm not worried about that. I'm just thinking I'd never be able to eat beans again. That would be a crying shame.
My favourite was everyone in England freaking out because they ate horse without being told. The rest of Europe is like, and what?
When did that happen?
A few years ago. Okay. There was like a big like, oh, they were sneaking horse into our diets without us knowing.
I know during World War II, it was commonplace to buy horse meat because that was one of the meats totally. That wasn't rationed. So it was very common for people to eat horse then.
I mean, I lived in a lot of countries where eating horses.
Austria, they like the horse, don't they?
Yeah, the Netherlands love the horse.
Yeah.
Here, they like a bit of horse. The French love a bit of horse. So they were all looking at the UK
horses,
like,
yeah.
If you're complaining about what's in your McDonald's hamburger, you should probably be complaining about the list of the other ingredients in there, not the horse.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, because it was the, what was it? It was like, it said 100% beef.
But that wasn't the company like, name.
Exactly.
So clever.
I know. The amount of times like, people get away
with winery
this.
And just call it sulfite free.
Oh my God. But you know what though? There are some idiotic things in the world. What was it? There was something, I just have to read this out because I saw it on the news today. And I shared it in my story, and it really made me chuckle. Right? I don't know if you saw it already, but I was laughing. Like, coronavirus meaning, why are people calling disease corona beer virus? Firm speaks out. That was a headline.
Oh,
and I was just
God.
Like, how can we not even understand? And it also the fact that this virus is a type of coronavirus, like many other viruses that we can contract, that we heal from. But it just made me laugh so much. And there's all these posts
the
about people thinking it's
we,
to do with the beer. It was just like, oh my God, we're such a like an idiotic species sometimes.
And like they used to think that it was just that we had a lack of information. Now we have all the information at our fingertips and we're dumber than ever. Here we are.
And all those poor, and on a sad note, all those poor people that are, well, not the poor people, the poor animals, like the pets that have just been, like, thrown off balconies and stuff.
What?
Because if they were scared that,
oh my God.
That, you know, you can contract, like, it's passed human to animal or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Also, the amount of risk.
Do your research. It's like, these people have really invested in their pets, like, straight away off the balcony.
Not even, like, just off the balcony.
Yeah.
Also, definitely the amount of racism
here.
Has been
Ludwig living. Would probably, outlive everybody.
Yes. Little chicken. But there's also been a lot of racism because of the coronavirus.
I know, it's
people
mad.
Have been like totally awful. It's like, come on, people.
Let's drink good wine. Let's accept that the coronavirus has nothing
not
to
a
do
beer
with
virus.
The Corona beer. I bet a Corona beer company's just like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, they should just play it to their advantage and make a funny commercial about it. Too bad the Super Bowl was, what, yesterday?
What to say, like, drink a beer and you'll be cured or something.
Something silly. Yeah.
But that could be really badly, that could be easily mismanaged.
Fine line.
Yeah. Cluster
where first. The best jokes live, right? On the fine line.
Yeah.
So actually, this is quite a winner. I'm pretty happy with it. It's actually, like, softening up the more we drink it. It's not as...
So sort of gamey, more savoury notes are starting to come out. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, like, mellowing out.
Yeah, agreed. I think this is definitely more on the natural side for some people. A little bit. I think a lot because of the appearance, but I...
Really?
I think, but I like it, but...
Maybe I just don't... I also don't drink that many reds these because of...
I love the savouriness in this, though. It's almost got this kind of irony, bloody kind of quality to it.
Also, it's mouthfeel because it has a little thickness to it. There's sort of this, like, unctuous...
Yeah.
Agreed. Very nice, actually.
Yeah.
But this thing will knock you on your butt, I think, if you drink it too fast.
I mean, Gwen, just drink 6 bottles instead of 8. You'll be all right. So we're a bit of a fan of the old zero sulfur, but it's not a hard and fast rule. We think it's important to know your producers, which makes it really difficult for people exploring, but of course...
And I think if you go to nice wine shops, like we did yesterday, to go to a shop that's mostly natural, when we asked, like, we only... I mean, I thought he had conventional wines too. When we asked, he said, no, actually, everything I have is natural.
Yeah.
Then you're already in the right place.
Yeah.
And ask the people there for advice, because that's what we did.
I think, so for people who are in London, I would look at places like P. Franco, Noble Fine Liquor, Winemakers Club, quality wines in Farringdon, wine rooms in West London, even Bottle Apostle as well, they've got some bits. And if you're in the south of London, look at Divine Cellars as well. In Berlin, obviously, Rocket, Vinicultur, 8 Green Bottles.
Fraulein Brösel.
Fraulein
Brösel. Naturalis, you can buy
Natural
wines
from
him too.
Mosto from Olaf next door. So there's quite a few shops around. Obviously, if you really want to know a particular producer, you can find us on Instagram.
Instagram at juice.podcast.
On Twitter at juice_podcast.
And on the website at juice.show, where you can pick up a snazzy toast bag. I mean, you could carry toast in it if you like. Better for wines.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know how many slices. It depends on the bread.
How long is a piece of string?
That's not interesting at all. I don't know why we need to know that. Forget that.
Otherwise, we'd love to hear about your favourite no sulfite wines. And... we'll see you next week.
Yeah, and just for those of you that are following or listening or tuning in, obviously please subscribe if you're on the audio platform or the video platform. We've got the YouTube channel, which is Juice Wine Podcast or Juice Wine Show. And then on there, you'll see underneath me, there will be a little subscribe link if you want to click it. It's just coming up with the Juice logo shortly. And if you want to check out another episode, just underneath Gwen.
Boop! Just like that.
Until next time.
Cheers.
Cheers.